Welcome to WonderPod-a-mania, episode 106. For our first and only bout of the evening, it's an Iron Man match, and we kicked Tony Stark to the curb. This is your main event, hailing from Ohio of the United States of America, the man who can understand storylines of Japanese RPGs without understanding the language. He's the savant of the realm of RPGs among many other video game genres. He deals with some of the most retarded people on a nightly basis. He dominates 4chan with the Hand of Steel while dismembering Destructoid with his ability to review games of the year with precise execution. He is the Gun Sage.
Yep.
Hailing from Calgary, hey. Alberta, Canada, the man with a plan and a diaper cake full of surprises like no other. He's the Super Mario, except not Italian, nor a plumber, not even the son of a plumber, if you will. As a child attempted to clothesline the British Bulldog, I live to talk about it. When this man finishes the game, he just doesn't finish it. He buries it in a plastic bag in his basement. Big Papa Pat, the Pat-Man!
What is going on, people? Episode number, 106. It doesn't matter what number it is. This is Carlos's dream episode right here.
A new challenger appears.
Hailing from parts unknown, the raging Cajun, the man with a mission and a pack of crayons, just asking for the chance to color a creeper red. The Acadian with the cranium, famous for being the youngest old man on WonderPod Variety Hour. If he isn't hacking his university's internet, he's dodging rent-a-cop bullets. He is the Glistenator.
Hello?
And finally, failing from parts well known, the twin brother of Eugene, the man who used the claws finisher due to carpal tunnel syndrome, the five-time removed cousin of epic adventuring survivor not G. Part hockey fan, part video game fan, it's a me, it's a Audio Master G. Are you ready?
Yay!
I am coming to you from outside.
Ooh. There's an internet outside?
There's an outside?
You mean outside? You mean outside of his room, right? Like in the kitchen.
I'll take a screenshot of where I am right now, and I'll send it to you. And you'll be like...
In the game, you're outside, right? Like, not really outside, because that's dangerous.
I'm about to blow your mind. Watch out.
It's dangerous to go alone. Take this.
I heard there's, like, polygon pollens out there.
Yeah, I heard outside looks a lot like Minecraft. Is that true?
Not as QB, surprisingly.
Damn it. I'm not going outside, then. Nope.
All right. Well, as people listening at home has probably figured out, this is not our typical lineup. Bruce is off fighting bears in the woods. He's taken over the Patman's place. And I think John Kind has been abducted by Cubans. So you got our four fine selves here filling in.
John is a communist. Are they communists still? Fuck, I don't know. I know they have nice cigars. That's all I know. All right.
Oh, wait. Okay, there you are. Now we have to add them. Wait, there's G.
I did.
Oh,
hello. Hello. So what far, everything's going perfectly. Perfectly. Yep. That's awesome. Just don't say, let's go.
Then suddenly Pat gets dropped.
Well, I thought he said, let's go. We were done. All right. Who's going? Shall we? It's going to be epic.
It's a little gap, all right, for what I've been playing, but whenever you want to start, want me to start, or mine's not going to be that long either. But
sure. Go, G-Man.
All right. Well, for the most part, since I last checked in, not much has changed. I've been playing Skyrim. I'm pretty much addicted to it. Most of my evenings are taken up by watching NHL playoff hockey and popping into Skyrim for my nightly visits. Enjoying the game quite a bit still. Haven't run into any game-breaking glitches, although, I found one a while ago. I just put that mission off and did something else. I did get a little bit of gaming in on my iPhone, but no new games there. So I don't really have a lot much more than that for what I've been playing. How about you, Patman?
All right. Well, I haven't been playing a lot for obvious reasons, but I've been playing quite a few demos and stuff. Might as well start on the 3DS. That's probably been my little system of choice because I can carry it around with me and shove it in my pocket. I've been playing the Mario Kart, stuff like that. But what I haven't talked about before, I downloaded the demo, at least I don't think I've talked about before. It's all a blur, of Sonic and Mario at the 2012 Olympic Games. Hooray! That's not bad, but it is exactly what you think it is. Yet another, and I mean yet another, mini game fest. They were fun on the original DS and maybe at the beginning on the Wii, but at this stage of the game, how many mini game fests can we play? Well, here's another one, apparently. I guess they're selling because Mario and Sonic are on it, but the demo itself is not bad. I mean, it's the nicest looking one I played. It's on the new hardware, whatever. Nice visuals, looks good. The sound is good. You know, the thing is, the 3D, I've turned the 3D on and the 3D off. It doesn't make a hell of a lot of a difference, really, compared to other 3D games. So that gimmick's kind of not, don't buy it for the 3D. It's all right. There's shooting games and swimming games, and you use the stylus and whatever. I'm just a little jaded with all the mini games. I mean, if kids like this or you liked all the other ones, there was a Winter Olympic one, there was a summer one, there was on all the various systems. Pick it up. It's fun. At least download the demo because the demo is free. Woo! But yeah, that's about it. What we really need, and I'm sure you guys will agree, is screw these Olympic mini game fests. You got Sonic and you got Mario in the same game, but there's no platforming. What the fuck? What the fuck? We need a two-dimensional old-school platform game. That would sell twice as many copies easily as this. But no, they give us more Sonic and Mario at the Olympics. Whatever. Anyways, what else have I been playing? The demo for an Xbox Live Arcade title. I believe it's called I Am Alive. It might be something like that. From Ubisoft. Not a bad thing. Basically, the story is going to blow all of your minds if you don't know what it is. Sit back for this original story. Are you guys ready? G, you're going to like it. Although there's no zombies. What we got is a post-apocalyptic world. And in this world, there's a guy trying to find his daughter. I know. It's amazing. It's revolutionary. I know. Gunsei, should that blow you away? I'll explain the graphics for you guys. Really, really dull and not colorful. I know. This is crazy stuff here. But so basically, right away, when you play the game, it's like, been here, done that. Kind of like the Mario one. But, I mean, it's a $15 game, and it looks really nice. And there's a few interesting things with the game. There's a lot of climbing and stuff like that involved, which is good and bad. It gets a little boring, but it's kind of unique. When you interact with people, you finally get into the city, and you're looking for your family. Ooh, riveting. You can actually do different things with characters. For example, there's a guy who comes up to you with a big ass machete, right? He's about to kill you or take your money or whatever. I don't know if money is worth anything. But then you take out your gun. There's no ammo in your gun, but the guy gets intimidated. So it depends on what you do. I mean, you can run away from this guy, or you could try to fight him, but he's going to slice you to ribbons. But if you take out your gun and pretend like you're going to shoot him, he actually ends up dropping his machete and you pick up the machete. So it's kind of neat. There's people in the environment you could help if you want to, but then you got to make the decision. This health pack, am I going to give it to this random guy to help him? Or am I going to use it for myself so I can continue my amazing quest to find my family in the post-apocalyptic world? So there's some neat stuff. I came across a lady who was defending her, her house or her territory. And if you walk too close by her on the street, she'll shoot you and kill you. But if you don't, if you listen to her and she's like, keep on moving or whatever, right? You move away, she doesn't. So there's kind of a few interesting things to it. But for $15, it's definitely, if you're into those kind of games, this is something that maybe in the summer, if it's half price or 33.333% off that they like to do, I might check it out. It's pretty cool. I believe it's called I'm Alive. It's been out for quite a while now, so I forgot the title. It's neat, if not very, very unoriginal. what else have I been playing? Not a hell of a lot. I guess I got back and got a little exercise playing Kinect Fruit Ninja. I had my nephew over, and even the wife is getting into it. It's great fun playing two-player Fruit Ninja with the wife, blaming each other for hitting the bombs, even though you know you did it. You blame the other person and missing the bananas. And so far, we haven't hit each other like in those videos where Grandpa just lays out his grandson. That's an awesome video, by the way. But, yeah, that's pretty much it. Aside from that, it's been like changing diapers and watching vomit. What do you guys been playing?
Gunsage, what do you got, man?
I got a lot. I don't know if Daniel wanted to go first or not. Or
I was going to say I don't really have that much, so if you want to skip me, that would be excellent.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, here's what I've been playing. I'll just go ahead and go in order of it, you know, least to most important for me. I've been playing Kingdoms of Amalur Reckoning, which could have just been called Kingdoms of Amalur or Amalur or This Here Kingdom. Something! It didn't need to have that long-ass fucking title, that's for goddamn sure. It basically feels a lot like Fable, but it's not Fable. I don't really know how much else to describe it. It's not generic. It's actually pretty fun, but it's got some good dialogue, some good writing to it, but it's mostly just one giant side quest. That's all you do in the game, a bunch of fucking side quests. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it makes the main campaign really dull. I mean, like, I've only done two missions in the main campaign, and then I've done, like, probably 50 side quests. They're not, you know, not interesting, but when the game doesn't really grab your attention enough to bother doing the main quests, feels kind of bleh after a while. It's still bright and colorful. It's got a lot of, you know, really nice graphics, you know, good music, really interesting combat system. You can basically fuck around with time and go ahead and destroy enemies all at once. But it still feels very kind of like what Pat was saying, like where you've kind of played this before. Like if you've played Fable 1 and Fable 2, it feels very familiar. So there's that, but then also, let's see, I've been playing Just Cause 2, which if you played Just Cause 1, you know exactly what Just Cause 2 is, and if you haven't played them, basically, imagine being able to go ahead and drive a freaking car off a cliff, jumping from the car, and, you know, enabling a parachute, zipping down with your grappling hook, going ahead and grabbing another car, doing it all over again. You can just fuck around with random people, the soldiers, and all kinds of shit. It's a really fun shooter. It's a really fun adventure game. The visuals are really, really nice. Overall, it's a really, really good game. And now the more important games. I've been playing both The Witcher 1 and 2, which the first one's really rough but has a great story. The second one has really nice visuals. Of course, I've got all this, you know, different stuff on Steam because my 360 is still down. I'm pretty sure they came out with The Witcher 2 Enhanced Edition or something like that recently. But yeah, I would definitely recommend picking it up because it's very, very good stuff. It's action RPG, really nice branching skill systems. Combat systems are really fun, and the game can actually be really tough. I've also been playing Legend of Grimrock, which is basically a first-person dungeon crawler, very similar to that of the old-school ones like Eye of the Beholder, but with new-age graphics. And finally, one thing I've even been playing on and off today, in between just ridiculousness as far as exercises, is Xenoblade. It's the best RPG on the Wii, even though there aren't many RPGs on the Wii, But it's one of those games where when you go into it, you think you know what it is. You think it's just going to be, oh, okay, I can go around and do all these side quests and everything. And it's true. I've done probably 100 side quests, mostly fetch quests and stuff. But when you play the game for the main story, it's one of those really incredible, like, JRPG experiences. You can't get enough of it. The visuals are great, especially for the Wii. The music is really good. The voice acting is spot on with pretty much all British voice actors. And I don't know. It's a really, really great game. If anyone still has a Wii, it's definitely worth picking up. That's about it.
All right. And then it's getting skipped. So we'll move on to our discussion topic. Now, we had a couple proposed here. One was some of the games left off the top 50 list.
I was even thinking, did you get a chance to see the Kickstarter thingy? Well, okay, you know the story about like how Tim Schafer got his shit like super funded, where he wanted to make an adventure game. He was only going to need like $400,000. He ended up getting like $2 million. Kickstarter is basically an independent publisher that relies on fans to go ahead and fund the project. They've actually got 6 really incredible titles that they already have well over the needs of the production costs in order to make them now. I don't know, I just thought it was interesting because it's like, wow, is that going to be kind of the way of the future? You know, the fans get to dictate, no, this is what we want. You can go ahead and make it for us, and we will pay you for it. As opposed to the big-name developers just thinking what we want and trying to assess the demographic and make it as wide as possible.
Interesting idea. And definitely then that they can actually bitch for a change, right? All these ridiculous bitch stories about Mass Effect not ending the way I want it to end and this and that. And, oh, Call of Duty, this weapon's overpowered and this weapon's underpowered. And why is this spawning here and blah, blah, wah, wah, wah. Now, if you're paying the money for it, maybe you do have more say in it. You know, something like that is an interesting idea, Gunsage. And I'd say for smaller projects, right? Like I'm talking Xbox Live Arcade, stuff like that. That's probably how it's going to start to get into mainstream. I doubt it's going to be huge. Maybe I am wrong, but you know, big $60-$65 games, at least not yet. But yeah, that's a cool idea and a good start for streaming and, you know, next gen when everything's going to be online and hopefully there'll be a universal, you know, be able to download on all the systems and all the things to be able to make games universally instead of exclusive, especially stuff for Wii, because everybody's going to have motion control and stuff like that. I think that'd be kind of an interesting idea. And the little bitches who complain about stuff that they have no right to complain about will actually have a say. But you'll have to wonder, though, guys, are these guys actually going to pay anything? The guys who say, oh, the self-entitled little fanboys of the day, are they, if they have the opportunity to actually have a say in it, to actually be involved in it, are they going to? Are they going to contribute their $2 or $3? Or will they continue to be little crybabies, self-entitled? I don't know. It's an interesting idea.
I mean, this just goes to show just more of the trend of stuff going more and more online. I mean, I knew about Kickstarter since before Tim Schafer started funding his project, and it's a pretty cool little website. There's a lot of interesting little projects that people have going on, and if you feel like donating something or pledging whatever amount, it's a decent way to get funded if you're trying to make something that's not necessarily going to appeal to trying to get a publisher and get make a company and do all this crazy stuff. So like Pat said, this works best, I think, for smaller projects. You may have a few bigger projects in there, but I think that the smaller it is, the more individual input that game maker is going to get from the masses that are donating. For smaller projects, I say go for it. For bigger projects, I say, I don't know. Sometimes it works, sometimes it might not work.
Oh, yeah. Not
that's like a big part of the gamble, is it not? But I have to agree with both you guys were talking about. I mean, first, it puts you in a position to have stock in something. And if you're already a fan of the person who's made things in the past, you have a good idea of what you might get out of it. But there's that risk. I totally can see that. This is certainly a better aimed at smaller, more focused genres of entertainment, whether it's video games or, you know, movies, or dare I say, I'm going to bring in professional wrestling here. And the reason is there's 2 similar projects I'm aware of right now that have been very successful for the fan buy-in concept. One is Jeff Katz's Wrestling Revolution, who's like breaking down a lot of stereotypes of how traditionally pro wrestling works. I'm not going to rant about wrestling. This is a video game podcast, guys. But he's managed to generate more than enough money to do the project, claiming that he was going to get past a lot of stereotypes. And another guy is an indie wrestler named Nigel McGuinness, who just wrapping up his retirement tour to film a documentary about his career. And he doubled his pledge. I believe it was like $78,000 instead of like almost $40,000. So there's obviously an audience that wants to see this story, right? So I think it can totally work. But would it work on the $60 game series? I'm skeptical there. And I would go argue that for any genre, really.
Oh, yeah. Really, the biggest project that's on here, they're going to make a Wasteland 2. Everything else really does look like, you know, okay, this is a smaller, you know, artsy indie project. It'll probably be Xbox Live Arcade or, you know, $15 Steam game. Even Wasteland 2, really, that's basically like what Legend of Grimrock is. It's a very specific genre that older gamers are going to remember, but younger gamers are probably going to be like, I don't know. With that, I'm like, oh, wow, yeah, no, I'd totally be behind that. That would be great. But then I can see a lot of younger gamers going, ooh. You know, so then it's like, well, okay, I could still see it making a profit at 15. I mean, Grimrock, it was like 15 full price, and then if you pre-ordered it, you got it for like 14. And I picked it up the day it came out, and they still let me have the $14, and it's great. I think they've recently had an article where they have more than tripled the amount of profit than they were expecting to go ahead and cover the development costs, and they're getting ready to go ahead and patch it and update it and all kinds of crazy shit. And I'm like, well, then, you know, clearly there's still an audience, especially if it's only $15. So, you know, what you guys are saying as far as I don't think it'll be mainstream. I really don't. But yeah, especially for smaller projects, I could definitely see it work, and I think it's awesome. Honestly, I hadn't heard of Kickstarter before I saw that story, so that's why I was like, ooh, gotta share it!
It's a good concept, for sure. I think all of us have a little bit of faith in it being able to work. Maybe not at the exact same levels, but it sounds like we're pretty much all looking for, you know, new ideas to have some realm to develop, because gamers, we've been playing them for years, and some of the genres certainly get stale. Speaking of games played, I got an idea. I got a concept here, because we can do lots of new stories, but how often do the four of us get together to record a podcast? How about just pick one game? We're going to hit the controversy, folks. We're going to talk the top 50 list, okay? But we're not going to get in an argument. No mercy, Pat.
Gee!
No, but I had to get that in there at some point. How about we all just pick one game? It doesn't have to be the best of all time on your list that didn't make it, but just one game you think you could talk a little bit about, and any ideas why it might have not made the list. And like, just to make it easy enough for you guys to have a second to think about it, I'll start and then I'll just pass it along, and you guys will have a bit of time to think. Now, this one is one that I was originally going to write an article about. It's not the best game of all time by no means, but it's one I really, really enjoyed playing. And I based all my votes on that exclusively, not necessarily whether they were like, you know, redefining culture. And I voted for number 9 overall, The Oregon Trail for the Apple II in 1981. And I played this game almost like one of my first addictions to any RPG title. 9 or 10 years old on a monochrome screen with like terrible graphics compared to now, but at the time it was really cool. And for just a fan experience of gaming and the love of playing video games, I had to rank this one in my top 10. So I didn't expect it to make it, but I definitely placed it higher than I really felt it should be, because I'm not the most honest audio master G out there. Now, any volunteers for next up?
Well, you know, a lot of my list did make it. The games I rated lower, I was like, these are really good games, but wow, they're just not as good as, for example, my top 10 or 25 or what have you. I think when I first started doing this, I had literally 200 games, and I had to start sorting and bumping out different games and like, oh man, I really want this to make the list, but it's not as good as these. Oh yeah, I was a little depressed that certain ones made it so low, but then I was like, well, but you know what, I'm probably the only one that voted for them, like Earthbound or Persona 4. Oh, and Deus Ex. The one that I kind of was hoping would make the list, but then I rated it pretty low, so I was like, I probably won't make it. The first Xenosaga. A lot of role-playing games, especially since Final Fantasy VII, they'll tug at your heartstrings or present you interesting situations that you never really thought about, as far as like a video game or something like that. One of the first things that happens in that game, you get into this Gnosis attack, and you've got these Realians, which are artificial humans and all this different shit going on, you know, all this sci-fi stuff. This guy who was in this war and is totally racist against the Realians flips this override switch to make all the Realians basically go crazy and then immediately start assaulting the Gnosis and self-destruct. And so then you come into kind of this moral dilemma where it's like, well, yeah, you know, they're designed to be combat things, but on the same token, they have lives. But they don't have lives because they don't have souls, but they have lives. But this guy's just, you know, he's being a crazy son of a bitch and just using them as basically human time bombs, throwing them at these monsters. And there's really nothing you can do. You're just kind of watching this scene play out, just like, oh my God, this is really happening. There's a lot of different shit like that that happens in that game. I mean, the game itself is incredible, especially from a technical angle. It was one of those games that it felt very rushed because originally it was a Squaresoft project branching off of Xenogears, and then they stopped funding it. So Namco eventually picked it up, rushed to go ahead and finish it. So it feels like a very rushed project, but a lot of the concepts that are there, the voice actors that did it, the writing, you could tell it doesn't matter. They didn't have to do much to get it out there. You know, it was just one of those really super incredible stories. But I think it was also probably my number 48 pick. So there is that. There is that.
I was really, really self-aware of the fact that the number scheme in my rankings is going to make a huge difference for certain games making the list. And with that, yeah, I fudged the numbers. Okay.
Me and Bruce actually talked about the list after it was first published, and we were going through like what we want on, what we didn't want on, blah blah blah. And like, Bruce, why didn't you write down Psychonauts? I mean, I totally put down Psychonauts. Why didn't you put down Psychonauts? He was like, oh, I totally forgot. And he got really mad for a little bit. But Psychonauts is one of those games that is just so unique, so weird, that you just can't really forget playing it for the first time. I got it on the 360 when it came out for arcade for the old Xbox games. That was my first time playing it, and it was so weird that it's so weirdly delightful that I fell in love with it. In an age where there's not too many good 3D platformers anymore, it was fun to jump around on stuff and just ridiculous how crazy that game is. You go into people's brains and do you know the Milkman, you know?
Who is the Milkman?
Yeah, who is the Milkman? That level
Where's
was
the Milkman? Are you an agent
amazing.
Of Milkman?
So I really think that should have been at least somewhere on the list. Not saying that it's better than wrestling, of course, but it definitely should have been on there.
Oh,
I can't believe he went there. Oh my God, how could he be so rough?
Hey, another controversial game we had, or you guys had that discussion, was Animal Crossing, which had its anniversary April 14th, a couple days ago. Just throwing that
anniversary.
Out there. Yes.
They did absolutely nothing like in the game.
Oh, keep going. All right, you're on the spot, Pat, man. Yep.
I cry. They went virtual fishing. What should I pick? I'm looking through the list, lots of great games, and one game personally, I mean, everybody probably knows by now, I'm a pretty big Star Wars fan. So any Star Wars game that wasn't on the list, you guys suck. No, I'm just kidding. But some of the best Star Wars games, now these are for their time, and you had to play them at the time to realize really how good the audio was, how awesome the graphics were, and you know just how the different gameplay modes in it. Was the Super Star Wars series itself. So Super Star Wars, Super Empire Strikes Back, my absolute favorite of the three. Super Return of the Jedi, not quite as good, maybe because it was the third time around, I don't know. But those vector graphics and stuff were pretty awesome. And it really combined stuff. I mean, it had really good platforming, really good action, some great bosses. It had those Mode 7 vehicular whatever levels. There were snow speeders versus the Snowwalkers, which became over and over and over again in all the Star Wars games. But it was the first time. If you had your Super Nintendo hooked up somehow to stereo back in the day, those were some of the best sounding games that you'll ever hear for their time. So I think the Super Star Wars series, sure, I'm a big Star Wars fan, it's helping, but Empire, Super Empire Strikes Back, stuff like that, really great games that, in my opinion, for their time, were definitely worthy of any top 50 or 100 list of all time. Really, the games you've had to have played them, though, to really appreciate why they were so good. I think that's ones I'd pick. Any of the Super Star Wars trilogy, really, I think deserved higher praise than what they got.
I certainly did enjoy the Super Star Wars franchise. It was a hard game at first, but once you kind of got over the learning curve, it was fun. I may not be the most hardcore Star Wars fan, but not calling myself a big fan would be a lie, too.
Challenging stuff in the game, that's for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. We got an article suggested a little earlier in the week, speaking of fandom, and it's from our own Glacianator. So I'm going to let Glacianator, if he's cool with it, introduce the story to us. It's a good one. It's about the old art debate and 3D and a whole bunch of Nintendo goodness. Take us away, Glacianator.
All right, guys. I don't know if any of you saw this earlier in the week. Miyamoto went to the Louvre last week because recently Miyamoto implemented 3DSs into like the tour guides at the Louvre, which I think is pretty cool. So basically what happens is when you go to the museum, you can request like an added audio tour where you can get the 3DS and it will help you sort of navigate around the museum. And I don't know if any of you have actually been to the Louvre. I have, and it is one of the most confusing buildings in the world. I mean, you can like take three corners and you'll be lost for the next 5 hours because you'll have no idea where you are. I mean, there's a freaking castle in the basement, like a complete castle. So you can get lost really easily. And apparently the 3DS uses triangulation something or other where they can actually tell you where you are in real time. When you walk up to a painting, they'll tell you about the painting and stuff. As a news article, I just wanted to let you guys be aware of that. I thought it was pretty cool. And if you have any other ideas for cool ways that 3DS could be implemented, I was just wondering if you had any.
Bang, 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 bang. I work on your campus now, Glacianator. All right. Well, sorry, bud. I have been to the Louvre. I don't remember it as well as I'd like to because I was pretty young. I was a little G. I do remember the navigation of that place was pretty crazy. A castle, indeed. It's an old building. Certainly got some really cool things to look at if you're into art. The main memory was the Mona Lisa because, you know, fame and whatnot. You're like, wow, that little fucker's small. This famous? You know, you don't say that out loud because your parents will smack you and you're 12 and all that. But anyway, I think this is a great idea. Integration, 3DS as a tour guide. I've been to tours where you have to rent these little boxes and these headsets. And you listen to the tour guide in your headset as you walk around the places you're at. And I'd even be more impressed if this service was free. I don't know. It doesn't tell us in the article. But I'm all for it. As for integration in everyday life, I think a smart thing that 3DS could do, even if it's kind of blatant money grubbing, is partner up with big corporations to make, you know, 3D ads you can look at in public that just do little animations. Sort of like scanning those little codes on your smartphone to get like information and URLs. That'd be kind of cool. I like personally when technology is used for academic purposes. So there you go.
Oh, Jesus.
Jesus, yes. Anyways, definitely an interesting idea there. It's cool that they're implementing it into, like you say, more than just games, more than just Mario. Hopefully Mario doesn't show up on the map there and Yoshi or whatever to distract you. But G brings up a good thing with the maybe not necessarily advertising, although that's fine too. So with those QR codes or whatever they're called, they have them on the 3DS also. That's how you scan Miis and stuff and bring them in. Like I can scan a Mii on the internet right now, the code, and then it would appear in 3D on my 3DS and I could save it and put it in my Mii Plaza and stuff. They could really do stuff like that too. Maybe not advertising, but educational and stuff. I don't know if they do that yet, but as a tour guide, go on, scan the code and have extra information. Stuff like that would be appearing on your screen. So that'd be pretty neat. Yeah, I mean, it's a cool toy/device. I hope they do a lot more with it to make it more mainstream and not just a gaming machine. I mean, it will never take over its purpose as a gaming machine, thank God. But hey, you can do more for it, maybe in hospitals or something for kids and stuff like that. I don't know. That'd be kind of neat in a children's hospital because they already like Game Boys and like DSs and stuff. So they could use it as more of an education thing or a distraction if they're in hospital. If the parents don't want them playing games, that'd be kind of interesting. That's all I got on this one.
Gunsage is back, so we're going to let him answer, and then we'll let Daniel close the story because he brought it up. So I think that only makes sense. And Gunsage, take us away if you're good to go.
Anatomy. Well, I mean, if you think about it, okay, now, on the DS, they had those Trauma Center Under the Knife games. So if you had something kind of like that, but maybe it was more designed to be educational, where it's like, okay, here is the intestine. All right, here is this. And you can have it where it kind of pops out at you. It lets you know, like, what's in front of what and, you know, whatever. You can use the stylus or whatever to move shit around. And they've already got applications where, fuck, I don't remember that exact type of surgery, but it's the type of surgery where you use a robot to go ahead and go inside of somebody anyway, basically. Theoretically, you could hook up a 3DS to do that, but you would definitely want to adjust the 3D settings first.
Alrighty.
Alright.
Daniel, go. Shoot.
Oh, those are all pretty good ideas. I was just thinking, to go off of what you guys said, that it'd be cool if it was implemented in schools. I know G, you're a teacher, so maybe, like, instead of having a presentation on, like, the chalkboard or, like, a projector, but you could pass out a bunch of 3DSs to class or whatever and go, like, over a geography lesson, and each person have their own little handheld 3DS, and they can, like, answer questions by tapping and moving stuff around, or even to take tests, illuminate paper. Everyone has their own little handheld device that they can input answers on. Yeah. So, thanks, guys.
Alrighty. Well, speaking of anniversaries, and we were talking about that a little earlier on the show, back in 1989, going back in time here in the DeLorean, on April 21st is the anniversary of the Game Boy being released. And I think all of us have a little bit we could talk about with the Game Boy. I want to start with the Pac-Man, just because I have a feeling he's got lots to say about his experiences with his Game Boy over the years.
Actually, it's interesting because I never owned the original Game Boy. I ended up getting one. I was a huge Game Boy Advance and then the DS and the 3DS. But the original Game Boy, for some reason, was something that we didn't have. My brother and I mean, we played video games. We borrowed people's Game Gears. And we had so many little handheld devices like those Tandy football games and those weird little things, but for some reason it was elusive, the original Game Boy. But we ended up getting the Game Boy Color, which wasn't really color. It kind of was color. You guys know what I'm talking about. It was more color than the original. But yeah, we got it with Tetris, and I mean, we just played the crap out of that, which is funny. My brother basically played the crap out of that. I wasn't really good. And what we used to do is would take turns, which I guess was fair, I suppose. He would last forever, and I would end up dying because I'm not good at the game in, you know, a short period of time. Sure, I'd get better at Tetris. But it always seemed unfair on a car ride or even sitting around at home bored. And he'd know when I died and he'd snatch it from my hands only to be there forever and ever and ever. And I'd hear the music and it would drive me crazy. And so that's pretty much my biggest memory of the original Game Boy. Amazingly, as a big Nintendo fan, is not having it, and when we got it eventually, my brother hogging it a lot more than I did. It's kind of funny. That's about all I got really for the Game Boy. I know you would think that I'd have more for it, but I don't.
All right. Well, hey, if you skip that particular model, that's going to happen. But
kind of weird.
There's the issue of the legacy, which is part of the reason we mentioned the milestone. I know of many of your other Game Boys from stories on WonderPod. I'm going to shoot you over to Daniel. I'm going to rant, and I'm going to let Gunsage hit us home. Glacier.
All right. Well, I actually never had an original Game Boy. My first system that I got was in 1998, and that was the Game Boy Color, which is sort of the new improved version of the Game Boy Advance SP to the Game Boy Advance, if you want to say that. I remember the very first day I got it, that was right after Pokemon was a really big fad, and the Pokemon games came out. I got Pokemon Blue version. I got the purple see-through Game Boy. My Game Boy is really, I don't want to say sentimental to me, but special to me because it's one of the few things that I brought from my house when my family evacuated for Katrina, and I actually have it still with me here today. I don't know if you can hear it, but there, it just turned on. So I have a few games for it. Even though it's not as fancy as the DS, I still carry it around with me more than I do with the DS just because it feels lighter and it feels more on the go at times. When I have my DS with me, I feel like I have to get into some sort of huge game or something. But with my Game Boy Color, I can just put in like Tarzan or some stupid Disney game or some random Mario game and just stick around until I feel like I don't want to play anymore. So I really like my Game Boy Color, and it really is one of the best systems ever made, I'd say.
Alrighty. My experiences with handhelds is actually pretty limited. Although, you know, recently having purchased an iPhone, I'm starting to get back into gaming on a portable device. But I did own an original Game Boy, and I owned some awesome titles for that thing. I certainly was a big fan of Double Dragon, one of my favorites to play. Tetris I did enjoy, actually. I wasn't hot stuff at it, but I still played a lot of that. The first Final Fantasy that came out in North America, don't remember the hyphenated subtitle. Gunsage probably does. What's that called? Adventure. Yeah, it was Adventure. Okay, the first one I played, whether that was officially the first or not, spent a lot of hours on that. That game was incredibly long, and I certainly have to tell you, I have a lot of nostalgia for that thing. Funny, super short story here. There's one of the personas of G was, hey, you want to go to South Korea and camp in the woods for free almost for 2.5 weeks? Boy Scout G? I'm like, yeah, well, I'm playing organized floor hockey every week. We're not doing a lot of camping. And I have to raise like $500 in 2 years to be able to go on this trip. So I go there and there's like, hey, you know, you can stop over in Hong Kong for a couple of days. And it's like another $200. I'm like, I got 2 years. I can earn that. So I did that. So I'm 13 years old. I'm in Hong Kong. And take a wild guess what I bought for $40 brand new? A Game Boy. And I got Double Dragon on that. And I got Tetris, I think, came with it. And Mario came with it. Total purchase cost, Canadian dollars, $55. Sitting on the plane playing my Game Boy. They're pretty new. One of the other Boy Scouts is like, hey, man, let me play. And I'm like, no, dude. This is a long flight. I don't have a lot of battery powers. I'll pay $5 for half an hour if I can rent it off. So I basically paid for my Game Boy and walked away with about $20, age 13. I didn't play the Game Boy on the trip home. Played a hell of a lot when I got back. And that's my Game Boy adventure story for you. And, as promised, the Gun Sage will take us home.
You hoard out your Game Boy.
Yes, I did.
He pimped his Game Boy.
It wasn't even a day old.
Oh, 2 days old, actually. I'm pretty sure it was 3 days that I found it on. No, it was the day of the flight. I remember that.
Around
too. Ooh. I know. Little capitalist G. Okay. Sorry, Gunsage. It's all yours, man.
Okay. I think I got the original Game Boy just before, just after the Super Nintendo came out. It's hard to even justify why. Because, you know, with the Nintendo, it was like, well, you know, I'm home a lot, and I ride my bike, and then that's about it. Pretty much that. But with the Game Boy, it was kind of like, okay, why? Oh, well, because whatever. You know, and I played a lot of games on it, mostly quirky shit that nobody's ever heard of. Yeah, Pat had to go. But mostly quirky shit like Mr. Chen's Gourmet Paradise, or something like that. A couple of Final Fantasy games, things of that nature. I actually played Pokemon on an emulator first, and then got a Game Boy Color, went ahead and started playing it more in college with Pokemon Crystal or something like that, the next iteration, and started enjoying it, and then accidentally left the entire Game Boy plus all of my games in the classroom one day and never sold again. It wasn't actually until the next year that I went ahead and got a Game Boy Advance went ahead and dicked around with a bunch of different stuff like that. Had a lot of fun, especially with Final Fantasy Tactics Advance. I would just like play and replay games. I played all the Castlevania games for it. Metroid Fusion was a really good one. Eventually I got a DS, started playing a lot of stuff for that, and then I got an emulator for that, so started selling that stuff off. And mostly that's just because it's like, I wouldn't sell it except I'm in a job where I can't really have it on me. It's kind of pointless to have something like a Nintendo DS or even a PlayStation Portable because it's like, okay, why? I'm not going anywhere or doing anything unless I'm going to work, and where I'm going to work, I can't really play anything there. I have to be focused on what I'm doing. For me, it's kind of the ending of a genre. I mean, I don't know. If I get promoted again or something, there might be a situation where it's like, well, what do I do now for the next 8 hours? I know! You know? But I kind of doubt it. I think, honestly, this is pretty much the end for me when it comes to portables, which is kind of sad.
Well, lifestyle and what you got going on in your life certainly plays a big factor in what you're willing to spend. You know, I can relate to that. It's totally similar situation. I have a smartphone. I don't even have a data plan because whenever I'm really able to surf the web, I have a wired computer at my disposal at all times. So it's just kind of like, well, why would I spend another $25 a month to get like 2 gigs? Or, you know, the data plans up here are kind of weak. It's like either if I'm going to really use it, I'm not getting enough megabytes with 100 in a month. And if I'm going to pay for a whole bunch, I'm spending a lot more money than I know I'm actually going to use. So I can relate, you know, but hey, man, hopefully it doesn't totally die for you. You never know. Hold on to one last handheld and then you'll always have something to go back to too, right?
Yeah, in terms of places to play, lecture classes are amazing.
I took a few classes where that would have been awesome to have. Regrettably left my Game Boy at home when I went to university the first time around.
No, that's actually probably a smart thing to do.
Yeah. Oh, we did have the N64, so we made up for it. All right. Last article. One more. Well, it's a nice little happy story deal, so you know I'm a mark out for those anyway. This was also from The Carlos, hailing from Puerto Rico. Yep, there's our shout-out. It's Kotaku put an article out. A fifth grader spends a lot of time with his grandmother, who happens to be blind, wanted to make a game for his grandmother to enjoy. And it's a program called Game Maker. It's an application that he used. You got to remember, this kid's like 12, so this is impressive on its own level. I mean, it's based on sound, obviously. If the grandmother is blind, she's basically moving around in a puzzle format, almost like Pac-Man, if you will. Your movement creates noise. So I was wondering, I got two questions. One, what do you think of this idea to begin with? Because it's, you know, interesting story. And number two, what do you think about games based primarily on audio? Because I know you guys discussed, or some of the people on the show discussed that it was an Xbox Live game. I cannot remember for the life of me the name of. So my two questions, there you go. What do you think about the use of these and how does it relate to gameplay experience if you played a game like this? How about Gunsage? Closed us up last time, was shut us down on the start, and then we'll head over to Glacinator.
Wait, how is this? I don't understand how this is blind friendly. Does it just
sound based pretty much?
Oh. Dude, if I made something like that, I would totally mess around. I would just mess around with the grandmother. Just completely make all kinds of random noises. Be like, you did something. Oh, what'd you do? What did you do? The princess has died! What is wrong with you? I don't know what I'm doing. I can't see. Grandma, what are you doing? That's irrecoverable. You got to start over. I don't I guess that's just me. Because I'm mean. I don't know. What was it? Back when I was still in college, there was someone who was trying to go ahead and use brainwaves to manipulate the ability to go ahead and flap up and down this little thing and make it fly through like tubes and stuff. It's not really the same thing, but it's kind of the same thing, sort of, if you're reaching. No, I don't know. I'm looking at this. I'm just kind of wondering how it works, because I guess it makes a bumping noise if he runs into a wall, and it makes a happy noise if he hits a jewel, and it makes a, oh, fuck, Grandma, what are you doing noise if he runs into a bat or something. So I guess there's that. if you look at the level design, it's pretty obvious that he's making it out to be it. Okay, you messed up. Don't do that. And there's little dynamite sticks if she really messes up. I don't know. I look at it and I go, I'm glad I don't have any blind relatives. I would totally mess with them. It could be interesting, except I don't know if you guys heard a while back, there's a kid who was playing one of the newest Soul Calibur games who was blind and facing away from the TV and kicking all of his friends' asses. So I really don't have much to say about this, to be honest.
Alrighty. Daniel, any thoughts on this? And do you recall the name of that game you guys were talking about? Or at least Bruce was talking about it.
Well, initially, I want to say that Game Maker is a really awesome program if you're a child and you're trying to get into making video games. When I was, how old was I? I was maybe 12 or 13. I went to a summer camp. It was like, design your own video game summer camp. And I'm like, oh, cool, I'm going to do that. And basically, the whole camp was just teaching you how to use Game Maker. And the cool thing about it is that it's entirely based off of if-then statements. Like, if the duck hits the wall, then this noise happens. Or if the duck hits this, then this happens. And so it makes it really basic. Initially, I just want to use this as a going-off point, just promoting this awesome program. And if you have any younger people you know that want to get into making games, I would totally suggest this to them. But in terms of the game itself, I don't remember what game that was we were talking about, G, where it was the blind guy beat the game, even though it wasn't designed for being blind people. It was some sort of side-scrolling platform where you jump up and down. But the point of that news article is that the kid beat the game, he was blind, and it wasn't designed for being blind. And he was able to use the audio cues and trial and error to beat the game. So it was technically a game for him. The point that I took away with that article and that I take away with this article is that sound design and sounds in games are extremely important, and we take them for granted quite often. I know that Pat always says when he's reviewing a game, oh, the visuals are good, oh, the sound's good. Not a lot of people mention the sound ever, usually. We take it for granted and we just go over it like, oh, yeah, the bullet sounds right in that glass, or, yeah, I really liked when Master Chief hit that guy in the face, he went, ugh. You know, but there's a lot more to games than just punching and shooting and hitting people. You have to think about when people walk, what the sound makes, and just audio in general, and that side of game design that we really don't think about that much. So, yeah.
I have to agree with you on that, Novo. I guess anybody out there who listens regularly knows the guy called Audio Master G has a bit of a bias. I like the idea that, you know, sound cues can make a huge difference in a game. Like I said, I hadn't heard about this story until right now, but, I mean, obviously it has to be something along those lines, and to me that's an indicator of sound design has to have been done correctly, considering the nature of the genre of fighting games. I mean, wow. I do appreciate sound and audio, obviously, and a fair number of the questions I've posed to the show over the, I guess, years now has been related to that. I'm just curious about it just because I do have the gift of sight, and hey, you never know. I mean, I wonder what the experience is like to someone who's blind playing. But either or, we got some interesting responses there. This will be a attempt, this whoring segment that they always run at the end of the show. Does anybody want to volunteer, or should I just...
I mean, you've heard out your Game Boy, so you should be good at this, too.
All right, touche. Well, I think our episode 106 is a wrap. It's been pretty cool. We've had four people who've never been exclusively on the show together without other presences involved. So that was actually pretty cool, too. Hope you had a good time. But now we have to advertise. WonderPodOnline.com. Everyone on this podcast contributes articles to that website, as well as the recording of audio that you're hearing right now. Go check it out. You never know what you're going to find. Good little website for us. We're also on Facebook. We are also possessing an old-fashioned email. I'm going to mix up the order of some stuff here because I don't have Twitters to show. That is wonderpodonline@gmail.com. wonderpodonline@gmail.com. We also, of course, have two guys that may or may not be available on Twitter or Facebook or elsewhere. If you want to shill shameless props right now, Gunsage.
It's gunsage.wordpress.com. I post stuff there.
Well, everybody, thanks for being here. And click. You can't see the cut.